This is the Business of Apps podcast, bringing you actionable insights from the leaders of the global app industry and the world's fastest growing apps. You can find more app news, data, and analysis over at businessofapps.com.
Welcome to the Business of Apps podcast. On this show, we invite app industry professionals to cover various topics, and we promise to do our best to keep it both insightful but brief. If you haven't subscribed to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or other podcast platforms where we can find us, I strongly encourage you to do that. Once you subscribe, you will be getting episodes of this show on your device as soon as it's available. In this episode, we have Gilad Bichar, CEO and founder at Maburst. Gilad, welcome to the BNS of Ours podcast.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Thank you for coming. Okay, so one of the topics that has been permeating this podcast over the years is mobile app growth. And in general, year after year, conference after conference, countless webinars, white papers, and podcasts have been dedicated to this topic. And it's all for a good reason. If your app user base doesn't grow, you cannot sustain a business that it will be growing. And because the app landscape has been changing, you always need to be in the know of what works and what doesn't. And this is exactly what we're going to covering on this episode with Gilad. But first, Gilad, let's kick off this episode with talking about you. Please tell us about your background in tech.
Of course. So I studied computer science in high school, and I got into marketing roles right after the Army. I was in the Army, Israeli Army, for 5 years. I finished there as a company commander in the officers training school. And from there, I actually went to work just like anyone else. So I started in social media, kind of manager type of a role. From there, become kind of head of social and mobile media for a bigger company. From there, became a VP media of an agency and then a CEO of a media company, all the way to a CMO in a startup. So I kind of seen each and every one of those size of the business. If you're thinking about what it is to be an advertiser, what it is to be a publisher, what it is to be a media company, an agency, I kind of seen each and every side of the business. I was also a mobile expert in Microsoft Accelerator. So any company that raised capital from Microsoft, I kind of helped them for like almost 5 years to help out to do the mobile on the best possible way. And also kind of leading the Tel Aviv University courses of mobile marketing and social media marketing. So I was involved in the industry for almost 10 years, basically going through different type of roles. And when I opened Maburst, basically it was something that was kind of saying, okay, I've done enough for many, many other companies and many other entities, and I wanted to do my own thing. And that's kind of how I got into the Maburst side of things, of being a consultant and basically helping to transition it into a company and kind of a full scale type of a mobile marketing agency.
Anything memorable from those days, from all those different experiences, something that stuck with you more than others?
So I think that any time that I met with an entrepreneur and they had this, they had this light and this type of crazy energy to change the world and doing something spectacular. And some of them were brilliant entrepreneurs that had crazy type of technologies of AR and AI, like things that can help you to, from so many definitions, like help you to do things that at the time sounds insane. And I think that every time that I work with entrepreneurs and working with like C-level executives and helping them to, like, I see the problem and I see that the technology that they brought in order to try to solve that problem, but then how to engage it with customers. How to, at the end of the day, you see like a fantastic product, but 85% of the users are not finishing the registration flow or not really getting to the aha moment of when you're actually delighting the user with a good experience. And so many that are kind of getting in the weeds of technical things. And technical things, I'm talking about making the user do Facebook Connect, getting the user to share their location with you and their the registration of 8 or 7 different steps of giving me the permission to do this and that and that, and now connect this and that. And all of that, like the user is asking themselves, like, what's in it for me? Why would I do all of those steps? And as long as you can't really justify that value, so many fantastic products and really genius ideas that are just dropping there because the onboarding experience is not as smooth as it can be, or the value proposition of what's in it for the user, how to celebrate the value in front of the user. So they will say, okay, I need to work hard for you in the next 2 minutes to open an account, but this is what I have on the other side, and this is why I need to be excited. And actually, I want to do that. It's not like you are making me do that. And flipping that is like, it's a common thread that was with each and every one of those engagements on how to simplify the user onboarding to delight them very early on in the process, to get them excited about continuing this flow, and then obviously getting the aha moment of, oh wow, this is a product that I really do need to start using every single day or every week, or again, depending on the product niche itself. But I feel like that's a very common thread for all of the different thousands of entrepreneurs and companies that I've met in the past probably 15 years. We're all having kind of very similar thread of challenges that they need help of solving in a very data-driven way of how to not lose 10% over here, another 7% over there, another 19% over this step. And at the end of the day, you're only getting 60% of the value of your marketing campaign or anything on that side. I think that this is a really common thread to tiny companies all the way to, you know, working with the Googles of the world and the Samsungs of the world, where their funnel is much more optimized, but still, like, focusing on two or three different steps on that funnel can still get you a 39% improvement on return of investment.
Right. So I see. So the biggest challenge was to marry these crazy ideas they have in their heads with the actual demand of people who will be using products based on those crazy ideas. Because people, for the most part, they conceive those ideas thinking about themselves. What will work for me? What I believe to be cool and great. And your goal, your mission was to actually land that plane, that idea, to actual demand. Okay, this is great for you. It's awesome. Now let's see if that product will work for actual users on scale. My next question would be, what does your company do today? What do you guys do for your clients?
Amazing. So basically, we're trying to be one-stop shop for all of the mobile marketing challenges as part of this process, which means helping with the strategy, with benchmark reports and seeing what works, what didn't work for their biggest competitors, going back in time of actually seeing what they've tested, how they tested. So you won't really need to start from scratch. And then we are going to the creative side of things, creating all of the creative deliverables, whether it's static ads, creative video ads, or anything that need to be solved in the storytelling part of what's in it for the user. And then going into the media, buying media on ad networks, RTBs, exchanges, social, search, influencers, you name it, on all of the different media channels that you can think of. We have another team, which is the organic team, which is kind of focusing on the upsell optimization, conversion optimization, localizations, and all of those things to boost the organic side of things. And we have our development team that is kind of creating everything that needed from the apps themselves, the websites, anything related with the product consulting, even of many, many different parts of the onboarding flow and things of that nature, push notification strategy, and kind of managing the entire life cycle. So basically, we can bring kind of anything that related from the development side all the way to the creative and marketing, and basically measuring the results of each and every one of those steps. So we have five main departments, and each and every one of those departments is kind of taking care of a different part of the user journey, from impression to click to download, cost per registered user, loyal user, and all the way to a paying user. So we have kind of five different offerings. From those five different offerings, we have 25 business lines of service. So on each and every one of those things, we have many, many, many different types of potential collaborations with the client, really depending on what they need to do in an outsource mode or with an agency, or what they have the scale to do in-house, and then how do we basically enhance their capabilities and helping them to cross to the next level and helping them to solve and troubleshoot a lot of different challenges. Even if they have the development in-house, a lot of times they need a consultant to give them the areas of where to be focusing on. Even if they are doing some of the media buying in-house, a lot of times they need an audit and a fresh eye to look on on their campaigns and kind of giving them the guidelines. A lot of times looking on the creative side and basically providing them the creative kind of best practices in the first 3 to 6 seconds, what needs to be appearing on those ads so you have a higher conversion rate and things of that nature, all the way to the upsell optimization that a lot of times they're doing that in-house, but they need localization. They need now to do that in 10 languages. They don't have the ability to do the 10 languages in-house right. every single month. So they're focusing on English US, for example, but the rest is being done with an agency. So with each and every one of those service lines, we have a lot of different offerings in order to help troubleshoot mobile marketing challenges, basically.
So the whole spectrum of marketing services you can think of, like anything you can think of marketing you need for your company, you guys covered.
I think that that's kind of what we bring to the market from day one. Like, the company was initiated like 10 years ago. And I think that the missing two pieces that I had when I was on other agencies were the strategy side and the product development side, which means it's not necessarily that we need to develop your app, but if we know how to get and bridge that gap from a user that downloads to the first time registered user, that's a big, big win. And that's a piece that a lot of agencies do not cover because it's not sexy. It's not a lot of media related. It's usually small budgets, consulting by the hour. It's not.
And it's harder.
Exactly. It's harder, but that usually unleashes the potential of the app that helps us later on that the media will be so much more effective. And because of it, to actually scale with the client very significantly.
Of course, because when app marketing is involved in the very first step, it's always easier later to market that product as opposed to you just being given the app that it was developed and you need to suggest a bunch of things that need to be changed and it's going to take more time. It's less efficient. So people are just wasting their time. Now, I mentioned in the beginning that, you know, app marketing, app industry, it's not static. Many things are changing. If you think about what changed for the last 10 years, it's a lot of things have changed. So can you talk about how mobile app marketing landscape has evolved over the past few years? What are the most significant changes you've seen? And how has Maburst adapted to all these changes?
Of course. I think that one of the biggest changes was the privacy changes of Apple and basically removing the ability to target in the same way and tagging users in the same way. And I think that that's probably brought us kind of the biggest opportunity because we were focusing on the tracking side and the BI and kind of configuring kind of what brings the best value. For years before it happened. And basically, we started practicing all of those changes with the privacy settings of Apple probably around 7 months before it happened. So we already had so many best practices of what works, what doesn't work, where you have access to the data, where you don't have that anymore. And when it happened, I feel like we got a massive surge of businesses coming up to us saying, well, our digital agency till now, we're dealing with all of those things. All of our campaigns currently failing. What we saw before on Facebook, for example, that was working fantastic for us, doesn't work anymore. And we need someone to take and basically rebuild the entire campaign strategy and things of that nature. And I feel like that change was hurting a lot of companies in our niche, in our industry. And I think that we actually got a very positive surge of like a lot of companies that were looking for their mobile expertise and not just a digital agency that, yeah, I can do mobile, I can do web, not a problem. Like I got you covered.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good enough after those changes. So for us, we got a very massive wave of new leads. Last year, I think that we finished last year with 6,300 leads coming up to our site and basically want to work with us. Now, we can't support 6,300 businesses. We only onboarded 54 new accounts. And those accounts, obviously, the ones that we chose to onboard because we feel like it was a fantastic fit. So we're saying more no to companies who want to work with us than yes, because we really want to vet them that they will be a really valuable client for us. So for us, those changes were very, very dramatic. And I think that it actually brought us to a much better place in the marketplace of agencies and in the marketplace of mobile specialists. We kind of broaden our services beyond just mobile to also a more digital kind of a bigger view when we've done two acquisitions in 2019 and in 2022, where we bought a development house and when we bought a creative studio that was dealing with web design and video production. But I think that we will always remain kind of a mobile first solution. So the expertise that we gathered through the mobile side is kind of what sets us apart from the herd. And I think that this is kind of helping us to maintain our branding of basically doing mobile right and helping clients really get the maximum value that they can out of their products.
I guess the lesson to learn from your experience is that always think strategically, understand that certain things you're not in the power to change. You cannot say, Apple, do not deprecate IDFA, do not, kind of a moving the scale towards privacy. Now, what are the key strategies that you believe are essential for successful growth marketing of mobile apps today? Could you share a case study where your strategies were effectively applied?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that from the get-go, app optimization was always pretty big on app growth. And when you're thinking about app optimization, you think about how users might find the app. And the app optimization, I think that became much more sophisticated in the past few years, where you have the ability to impact users with so many different gateways to the app. So it's no longer five screenshots, you're telling the story and that's it.
No,
Like you
you're
have.
done.
Yeah, you have 35 different gateways in the App Store on iOS and 50 different gateways on custom product pages on Android. So you really can custom made each and every step of the users to from a specific ad to the right storytelling of it in the App Store, and from there getting them to the right experiencing within the app itself. And I think that app optimization and CLO and conversion optimization are really, really crucial parts of, besides obviously media and influencer marketing and all of the buzzwords around influencer content and UGC content and things of that nature. And I think that app optimization and conversion optimization can really pose a massive impact on clients. We helped Upside, for example, within less than 6 months to be able to produce $16 million worth of value using app optimization and conversion optimization. And the way to do that was just like optimizing the screenshots, optimizing the preview video. And basically, they had very, very large marketing budget year over year. And they spent on many, 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 like maximizing whatever you can think of with the eight-figure budget every single year on the marketing side that they were doing in-house. And we asked them a really simple question, like, what happens? What if you can actually save around 20% on the cost per acquisition on all of your channels? How big that impact can be? And basically, when we crafted all of those plans for the A/B testing, we really tried to understand what's in it for the user. Why would they be so excited to download your specific app? And then it started to do a very meticulous ABC testings of many, many, many different reasons about what will get users excited. And then what happens when you're adding the preview video and showing how it looks like from the inside and creating obviously different versions for iOS, different versions on Android, portrait, landscape mode, testing all of the different variants. And at the end of the day, within less than 6 months, bringing them $16 million of value. That if you're thinking about the cost of doing all of those tests, we're talking about the, let's say, the hundreds of thousands, if I'm really exaggerating, and then getting that type of improvement of almost 20% lower cost per download, it's a massive, massive impact. And I think that using all of the capabilities that Apple and Google possess in front of you. And a lot of times, people are just lazy. They say, yeah, okay, I have sets of screenshots. I have one set there. I will optimize it once a year and that will be enough. But then if you're thinking about the experience from each and every one of the sources and the main keywords that you're going after and the main audiences that you want to impact and creating them a much more custom-made flow from impression to getting to the App Store presence and seeing exactly what their pain point was, that you're solving their pain points, and then getting them in a smoother way into the store, all the way to downloading the app, that's something that really can revolutionize any kind of marketing campaign. And I think that that's an amazing opportunity for anyone who is a growth marketeer in the mobile marketing space.
Yeah, exactly. It's your observation about ASO is particularly familiar to me because over the years the App Store optimization as a service evolved that much, but many people still perceive it just picking out a bunch of keywords that it will work for your app and drive traffic. But this is very decisive. It's You're being deceived thinking that AI is so simple. It is not. If you're trying to achieve the impact you're just describing, it takes a lot of work. And for people who are heavily involved in development, writing code, creating a right design, going through a beta testing, fighting with every bug in the app, they may perceive so as a part of the app marketing is something easy done and forget about it. That's the problem. So the introduction of extra pages for both the app stores create a great opportunity for a developer, but at the same time they need to actually take advantage of that opportunity. If we're doing that, they need help. They need guys like you who can actually do this job, having previous experience, knowing what works, what doesn't work, and actually having a real perception of how it needs to be done, not just peripheral or superficial knowledge of, oh, I've read those papers, it's just that's pretty easy, just piece of cake. What are some of the common challenges your clients face in mobile app growth? And how does MobileBurst help overcome those challenges? Could you give us an example of a difficult campaign and how your team navigated it?
Yeah, sure. So I think that when Movers is stepping in, we're trying to think about it very strategically. Like most of the agencies will tell you, give me the media budget. We will just try to optimize it and see where we can get you the kind of the lowest cost per whatever action that you're looking to get. But then a lot of times something in the funnel is broken, which means something in the funnel doesn't work. You're trying to fill out a bucket of users and you have so many leaks on so many different places. So I think that a lot of times coming back to the drawing board and saying, well, wait a minute, the conversion from click to download is X. And then the conversion from download to registered user, we have there another very large gap. And then from there, getting them to loyal users and paying users, we see the gaps all the time. So we can benchmark them and see where we see the biggest opportunity for improvement. And what would happen if instead of converting 10% to users that are starting to trial, for example, for a subscription app, what happens if we will be able to get it to 20%? How big the impact would be? And for those things, a lot of time you need to be brave because you need to start, like if you're thinking about it from the upsize, on the up approach is like you're working with a marketeer, and that marketeer a lot of times is not even in charge of the product itself. Like they have marketing division and they have product division, and it's not under my control. And like, yeah, I got the app. This is the app. This is how it works. I'm in charge of marketing it. Don't get away to the marketing, like from the marketing side to the product, because at the end of the day, we can step on many different toes. And at the end of the day, it's not under my responsibility. But bridging those gaps and actually getting the harder discussion with the product a team there and starting to say, you know what, those changes can change and revolutionize the entire marketing funnel. And we need to iterate them. We need to A/B test them as well. And not just, yeah, we can get you 10% better than what the previous company has done for you on the cost per media, but it will not change the cost per subscriber by 50% like you want and like you aspire to get. And if we want to change that side, we need to optimize two things. A, the monetization, like how you're actually positioning what's in it for the user to subscribe. And the second part is the onboarding. If we know that now 60% of the users are not registering, you don't even have their emails, you don't have any way of communicating with them, you don't have the permission to send them push notification. So there is no way to get them back where they abandoned and continue the flow. So for those things, we need to go deeper into the product side and actually change a different flow within those elements. So we will be able to impact where the biggest problem is. The problem is not from impression to click to download. The problem is from download to activation. And a lot of times, bridging that gap, having that harder discussion with multiple teams in the client side. Like a lot of time you need the marketing and you need the branding and you need the development and you need the product team. And in large organizations, it could be 15 people on the call just to move something simple on when you're popping up that pop-up of saying, do you allow this app to send push notification? Yes, allow or don't allow. This simple thing that if it's triggered too early, if it's triggered without the user knows what they're about to get in favor of that. Like, why it's actually their incentive to get push notification. It's very, very different. So a lot of times we need to get much deeper into the mold of our clients and helping them to have the discussions that sometimes are not very pleasant, because the product team always think about the best features and the newest technologies that they can implement and new algorithms that they want. And the problem is not there. The problem is that 95% of the users are not even experiencing the aha moment that the basic product is getting, because no one gets to those features. So adding more features on top of that will not help. Like, it's kind of solving a different challenge. So iterating on the monetization with the trial, without the trial, what are the cost structure of the trial, and things related to the onboarding experience of the product. Those are things that we are helping a lot of different clients, even though that they are not even aware that they have a problem. They don't have a way to benchmark themselves. Like, this is how I got into this company. I have 6% of the users that are actually paying, 94% of the users that are not paying. That's how it is. That's how it will always be. Let's try to get the first part of the funnel optimized, and they're leaving a huge opportunity of getting from 6% to 9%, and how big of an impact if you can get 50% more of users that are paying you every single year, and for each and every dollar that you spend. So those are the type of the harder discussions, the harder challenges that a lot of our clients are facing. And every time that we are managing to cross the road from marketing to product, and helping with the entire side of like how to strategically help that company growing, we see like a double-digit growth during this year, if not sometimes it's even more than that, depending on their budget and depending on kind of the scale that they're bringing with them.
This is Greg Gillott. I don't think people really appreciate the job that guys in your company do, because you're actually helping to sell a product on a big scale. Think about how well you can interact with a client when you're selling something in person. You're selling a car. You always see like what you need to do. You're interacting with that person. At the end of the deal, he is driving away and the money is in your hands, figuratively speaking. With a mobile app, just like you said, there are so many occasions, so many chances for people to drop out. You never had a chance to interact with them in person. You can only have all those tools, the right tools to use to persuade that person to continue to use the app, to see the value, to become the loyal users. And when it comes to subscription apps, to pay that subscription every month. It's a hard work. You're doing this job for tens of thousands of users for one product. And every time you only have those tools without in-person interaction to convince that person to continue to use your product. It's a hard job. Now, obviously, the answer in my mind that will come when I hear this question is obvious, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How has the advancement in technology influenced the approach to app marketing? Are there particular technologies and tools that have transformed the way you market apps? I know AI just pops up in my mind immediately, but what do you think?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think that AI is a massive improvement and advancement, and that's something that will impact the world for now and onwards. But I think that the ability to be data-driven and seeing what works and what doesn't work, which means at the end of the day, there are users. You're trying to bridge your message to the user and getting them to a very positive experience about whatever you're trying to sell. That's the, you know, that's the basic of it. And I think that being data-driven and understanding which customers to approach with which type of messaging that will resonate with them and will get them to one step closer to the action that you want them to take, that's the key element that with all of the technology advancements and with all of the new tools that are available and all of the beta programs of TikTok and Meta and Google with all of the crazy algorithms, the machine learning that touches the users and understand who is going to be the most relevant to serve that ad with, at the end of the day, it's a fight of data-driven understanding your users' core behavior, like what's in it for them, and then how you draft the right ads to make them excited about what it is that you're offering. I think that the more is the kind of the industry continues to evolve, and you have more automated campaigns, whether it's with Google, whether it's Meta, that are giving you the universal campaign and things of that nature that making the life of marketeers much easier. The only playground that you still have is the creative, and then which creative will be developed and how that will be in front of the consumer, and if that's something that we manage to get them excited about your offering. So I think that, yes, AI will play a massive part of it. I think that more and more sophisticated tools that will come and make our lives a bit easier on the bidding strategies and on the targeting sides and trying to help us to unveil more potential. But at the same time, we need to be very mindful about what each and every vertical, each and every micro segments of users need in our product. And then how do we celebrate that in a way that will get them excited to come in and give it a shot at the end of the day. And I think that will always be kind of the big part of the marketeers, that with all of the craziest technology that you can think of, understanding the user, understanding the user behavior, understanding where they are dropping off, what type of messaging will actually get them to have a one step closer to what you're doing. Those are the things that will be kind of giving the extra mile for the data-driven approach and making sure that we are looking into each and every step of the funnel in order to really convert them to the action that we want them to take.
So don't drop the focus on your major goal in your business. Do not be distracted with any fancy tech. Always ask a question: does this tech help me to achieve my goal, to understand better my users or not? And what is the right use case? How can I take advantage of that tech? What would be just wasting your money, and where I should actually invest more because it does make sense? Now, for marketers who are just starting out in mobile app growth, what advice would you offer them? Are there common pitfalls they should avoid or best practices they should follow to achieve success?
Great question. So I think that for kind of someone who's starting in the mobile marketing niche, I think that an area that can bring you great growth is an area that is a bit more tedious, but always we always see amazing success for that is localizations. And when you're thinking about localization, like thinking about localizing the app, whoa, wait a minute, I don't know German, I have no idea how French, it's the right to left, left to right, Arabic, Hebrew, like so many languages, so many things, who wants to deal with that? And because of that exact approach, most of the marketeers and most of the app growth experts are not really doing it because it's a lot of work. But at the end of the day, to get another 20 downloads every single day, because you localize it to Portuguese. And then another 15 downloads every single day from, I don't know, even Iraq or from French, or another 17 downloads that you're getting every single day from Romania. All of those things are piling up to pretty big pile of new users every single month. And doing that in the App Store helps you to basically be there where a lot of your competitors are lazier than you and they haven't done that. And because of it, when they're looking for your type of solution, it's not as competitive as English is, because everyone are doing, optimizing the hell out of the English language, but lacking of that additional step of localization and culturalization for different languages. So I think that even though that is a big headache, so to speak, the opportunity there can be very, very significant. We have companies where we help them to get anywhere from, let's say, 200 downloads that they had every single day organically, all the way to 2,600 downloads every single day organically, just by doing those localizations. So the number and the opportunity there is really massive. Yes, it's a lot of headache. Working with translators and not just using Google Translate, again, doing the extra mile and doing the keyword research on those languages and seeing which type of keywords have more traffic. It's not hard work, it's a lot of work. And I think that if you're doing it, the opportunity for you to get much more downloads every single day, instead of paying by the user on media side, you can get them organically. I think that that possesses still a big, big opportunity for someone who's starting mobile app growth from the get-go, especially if you have a low budget. That's something that can definitely drive really nice growth without having to pay too heavily on the marketing, like on cost per download for each and every one of the campaigns.
This is great, Gilad. So on those markets, you may have the same demand or even more demand than in your own market. But at the same time, the number of competitors can be less because if we're talking about the smaller country where doesn't have the sophistication and the choices of technologies that Silicon Valley provides you, you're competing actually in the smaller pool of competitors. You have a better chance to get a leg up on those markets if you are willing to spend extra effort to adapt to localize your app to those markets.
Okay.
I think you have something to say about the next question because obviously you have a number of years of running Burst and all those previous years of experience. Looking at app marketing as a whole, what would you like to change about it the most?
Wow, it's a hard question. I think that changing something in the industry, I think that the one of the challenges that we face is like a lot of people that think that, hey, you know what, we'll just invest a little bit in influencer, for example. We're getting millions of views, the app will go viral, and you know what, and that's it. Like it's like overnight we have millions of downloads and it's all going to be great. I think that a lot of companies are selling those dreams that, hey, let's use influencer marketing because this is where you have the ability to shine big time. And I think that it's not really fraud, but I feel like it's setting the right expectations with clients is extremely important. And most of the campaigns that you will do will not become viral. Most of the apps that will go and launch in the app world will not get viral. If you're thinking about what is a viral product and actually something that expands really big, it means that each and every user tells more than on average more than one more user to get it to spread. And most apps do not do that. No matter how amazing the experience is, most of them are not really doing it. So I think that using of influencer marketing and setting expectation around influencer marketing, we get so many companies that reach out to us saying, hey, you know what? We tested two different companies and your app didn't go viral. And I said, like, your app is a dating app. Like, if it's a dating app, it will not go viral because a lot of people are ashamed of using those apps. Not because it's something that you need to be ashamed of, but you don't want to tell your friends that you couldn't meet a person in real life, so you need a dating app for that. Like, even if it's the most valuable product on earth, you not necessarily want to share it with other men, for example. If it's a man, they don't want more competitors, so to speak. And if it's on the female side, it's something that you might be a bit embarrassed of admitting. Again, it's much more common these days, but I feel like the majority of the apps cannot go viral. And I feel like a lot of salespeople on the agency side are promising the world and saying, yeah, you know what, when we are doing that, they're showing one specific case study of insane results and saying this is what you can expect, and then the companies are setting those expectations with their board, with their management, coming to the market and then fail miserably compared to where they set the expectation. And then when they're coming to the next agency and looking for a replacement, and then someone actually telling them the truth and saying, well, guys, I don't know why this were the expectation, but it's not very realistic. This is what you can actually expect out of that. And then they're really kind of saying, well, if that's the case, we might need to pivot and we might need to actually produce another product or coming to a different monetization strategy because that cannot work in our mathematical equation of pro forma of actually making profitable out of that. So I think that a lot of mobile marketeers are still promising the world, especially when it comes to influencer marketing, where they're saying millions of views. What would happen if you have millions of views on social? And usually it doesn't mean much. So I think that that's something that I'm a bit more like I have so many discussions, hard discussions with the management of companies. They're saying, but this is not what we were told. And saying, I'm sorry about that, but it's the reality. That's the benchmark. This is how it works. It's not like what I want it to be. I would love it. I will open the champagne bottle together with you if we will be able to reach that. But it's not what you should expect because it's not very likely that it will happen.
I'm totally with you, Galat. People do not realize that as great as influencer marketing is, the second part of the equation people are not aware of. It's not for everything. People cannot be excited with many things for whatever many reasons, some of those you've just raised. And it's a great tool in a toolbox, but it has very specific kind of a usage. It may work in specific cases, but it's not something you would recommend to many people. When you just want to sell them an extra service, and you want to just, blind them with the big shiny numbers. Yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
I couldn't agree more. I had a client reaching out to me this week, and they wanted to do, and that's a very big misconception in the area of influencer marketing. They wanted to do a massive campaign of influencer marketing, but they are only servicing in one specific state, which means they wanted to focus only in New York, hopefully on New York City more than even in New York. And I show them, like, I have access to 5.8 million profiles of influencers in the US, and I'm subscribed to so many different tools. We're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that level of data. And I show them that the most advanced type of influencer, even if that influencer has 6 million followers, if you're only trying to target people around New York, most of the influencers, even if 95% of the followers are from the US, it will be scattered 2% to New York, 3% to San Francisco, 3% to California, or let's say 2% for Florida. So if you have 50 states and someone is trying to promote something very, very locally, it's the wrong usage of platform. Like, majority of the budget that you're going to be spending on collaborating with this type of influencer will be wasted on people outside of New York. So if you want to use that, not a problem. Create a UGC ad, create an ad, and then post it, and using the ad platforms to only target people around New York. That's much smarter. But they're so fond of the idea that, no, my CEO said that we need to use influencers. And now, yes, you can pay that influencer $6,000, but 95% of the audience is outside of New York. So why using this platform? It's the wrong platform, the wrong toolbox to use for that specific thing. And it's not a common knowledge in the industry. So someone decided that, hey, a friend of mine or a colleague actually used influencer marketing, and it was skyrocketing their business, and it's not going to be working for you if you need to be very, very specific, very local on a state level or something on that side, or definitely not on a city level. So it's something that I feel like it's a big misconception, and setting the right expectations based on data and seeing what the data dictates, where how many of the followers male and females, and what everything you can know about an influencer before we've been engaging with them to understand where the audience is from, so you would make sure that this is the right fit for the campaign.
Gotcha, Gilad. That's amazing. All right, so we've just covered the topic on the table. This is the first part of the show, and we transition to the second one. Every time I have a new guest, I always take this chance to ask a few quick questions, thus helping people who are listening to us know my guests a little bit better. Here we go. So rapid fire questions. What smartphone do you have now? Have you been switching between these two giants, Android, iOS, or just one side all the time?
It's a great question. I think that I started with iOS and Android. I had both of them in my pocket till 2015. I felt like I really need to master both operation systems. But from 2015, I became a bit lazier and basically only work with the iPhone today. So I have the iPhone 15 Pro Max, the bigger screen. And I think that it's a spectacular phone. And I can't really go back to Android at this stage.
Got you. Okay. All right. So, back in time, before the era of smartphones, do you remember your first mobile phone?
I think it was the Motorola, those clap phones, that the Motorola Mirrors i76, I think it was, that was very, very advanced at the time, with the push-to-talk feature that I really liked. But that was a very, very different era, I guess.
Oh yeah, back in the day, Motorola, the glorious days of that company. All right, back to present. So imagine you've left your home for whatever reason, you left your iPhone sitting at home. What is the most missing feature for you at that point?
I think that it would be or the camera or WhatsApp. I think that those are probably the two tools that I'm using the most. WhatsApp for communication with the world, family, and everything. I'm living basically in the US. Most of my family is in Israel. So at the end of the day, this is kind of my main communication tool. And also the camera, because I have three kids and I'm picturing them every single opportunity that I have. Two beautiful girls and one really awesome son. And at the end of the day, I definitely want to have the memories of so many different moments outside of work. When I have the time, I want to be there with them, and I want to also treasure those moments.
Exactly. That's the best case for your camera. Absolutely. As great as iPhone 15 Pro is, do you have a moment when you think about any technology, hardware, software, both that would be great to have on your phone, Not particularly something fancy and trendy, but if you think about like your personal use, what would make that device a better tool for you?
So again, thinking about the kids, I think that one of the things that weren't added to the phone just yet is thermometer. So if my kid doesn't feel well, the fact that it can also measure kind of what is there, I don't think that it's that sophisticated. You have the thermometers that you can just scan on the forehead, and then so I think that adding that to the massive amount of tools and features and elements that you have on your device shouldn't be that big of a deal, and it will help a lot of parents out there.
Oh yeah, healthcare, this is the next industry to disrupt for sure. And thermometer will have for sure having your phone. All right, very, very final question before I let you go. How can people get in touch with you and get more information about what you do?
Amazing. So the easiest way is going to be logging into our website, www.mobers.com. And if you want to get in touch with me, it's g@mobers.com. That's my email. Feel free to reach out. And again, I would love to help with whatever we can.
Great. Gawab, thank you so much for coming. Thank you. It was great.
Thank you very
Bye-bye.
much. Thank you.
And that was Gilad Bichar, CEO and founder of Memburst. To listen to more episodes, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Just search for Business of Apps. You will find us easily. Remember, we release episodes on Mondays, so subscribe and you will be getting episodes of this show on your smartphone, tablet, or computer as soon as we release them. And please don't forget to leave us a review or comment on iTunes. It is highly appreciated. And all episodes will also be available on businessofapps.com. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Apps podcast. For more, head on over to businessofapps.com.